Good afternoon, everybody. Dan Kennedy here. Thank you for joining us. We have a, as Lee Milter observed a minute ago, we have a guest-rich call today, so we have no time to waste to give you everything everybody's got. I'm going to begin in a minute or so with our first guest, Les Roberts, who is the author of When Place Die, the new novel to which I made a contribution or two. And I've got a few questions for Les, and he was kind enough to take time out of writing his next book and to be with us. And then Les is going to run, and then we have three panelists, for those of you who are GKIC members, kind of from our world, who we will also be talking to about the use of story, but in their case specifically about the use of story in sales and marketing and advertising. On broader terms, with Les, and Les, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
I'm going to start with a question for you because you have perpetuated now a character and a series of books and public interest in those books for a long period of time.
Right.
How many titles are there, and what time span is that over?
Okay. My first Cleveland novel, which was in 1988, was called Pepper Pike. And When Place or Die is number 17 in that series. I've written 27, 28 books altogether. So, you know.
But the Milan series is 17, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So just about anybody who is on this call, runs a business, entrepreneur, marketer, et cetera, has really the same task ahead of them. Often, they are their own character to their audience.
Right.
So the first thing that, if you don't mind, I'd like you to talk about is how you build and sustain audience interest over that long a period of time so that people are eager, sort of standing in line for the next adventure, the next communication, are all excited when the next book is coming out. How do you make that happen?
Okay, apart from the actual mystery plots, and those are relatively easy, by the way, I try to keep people interested in the protagonist, Milan Jakovic, who is a Slovenian-American private eye in Cleveland. In his life, things happen and things change just like they happen in our lives. I mean, I've gone through several relationships with him. His best friend in the world was killed about halfway through the series. He was working with that best friend who was a cop. And now a new cop has come along that doesn't like him at all, Lieutenant Florence McCarg. And so there's friction there. As I say, he's had several relationships. And I think most important for me anyway, over these 17 books, over 25 years, he's gotten older. And when people ask me, why did you make him older? I always say, look at me. we all get old, and his life changes. He's now right around 60. 60-year-old guys don't get into fist fights anymore. So I've brought along a companion for him, an intern, if you will, named Kevin O'Banion, K.O. So he gets into all the tough stuff now. So I try to change enough about his life and his existence to keep people on the edge of their seats waiting for the next one.
How much of him is you?
Well, he's Slovenian. I'm not. He's 6'3". I'm not. He used to smoke cigarettes. I've never smoked cigarettes. He drinks Stroh's beer. I have had one Stroh's beer in my life. However, his ethics, his morals, his point of view, the way he observes life, that all comes out of my head. So I would have to say he is a lot like me, and he grows more like me every time I sit down, you know, and start a new book.
And I think, and I imagine you would agree, I mean, so people who aren't regular detective series or mystery series readers might make a different assumption, you know, when you said, yeah, there's plots, but they're really sort of easy and formulaic. It really is the character that matters, and this character has, I suppose all great ones do, has a profound philosophical position and a distinctive voice that its audience knows.
Oh, there's no question about that. There's no question about that. Years ago, a friend of mine was reading all my books, including several of the ones that I wrote about a Los Angeles detective years ago. And she said to me, that guy from Los Angeles, Saxon, is the kind of smooth, charming, sexy guy I might want to have a six-week affair with. Milan Yakovich is the guy I want to marry. So he is very much who he is, and while he changes, as we all do, I think I do so politically, I do so with regard to spirituality, I'm still pretty much the same guy that I always was, and I have certain things to say, and I like saying them. So I think that if somebody comes along and picks up Win, Place, or Die and has never read any of my other books, and by the way, you don't have to do that. Each book stands on its own. I think they will find a guy that they're either going to like or they're going to hate. And, of course, you know, anytime you write anything, 10% of the people that read you are going to hate you. But what are you going to do? But I think that I've tried to make him an interesting and very human kind of a guy. You know, he's a tough guy. He's an ex-football player. He has a master's degree. He's losing his hair. He has been divorced, and he's, up until a couple of books ago, he has not done very well with women at all. But I try to make him human. I try to make him fallible. I try to give him mistakes to make, just like you and I and everybody else make them. Well, not me, but you.
There you go. What do you think, what do you know to be the most important aspects of story itself? I mean, not narrowed down to plot, but bigger than that. I mean, what makes a story work?
Well, first of all, suspense. You'd really like to know how it's going to turn out. And obviously, when somebody sits down and reads a murder mystery novel, they pretty much know that the bad guy is going to get punished and the good guy is going to come out okay. But I have to keep you in suspense as to what's going to happen. How are we going to get to that ending? And, of course, in Win, Place, or Die, I have this 60-year-old guy get into all sorts of big trouble and almost die towards the end. So I think that's a very important thing. But I think that also people want to know how he is going to change from the beginning of the book to the end of the book, because all of us change a little bit every day unless we're sitting in a dark closet somewhere, because you see things, you hear things, you recognize things, and you think a little bit differently about them, certainly politically. You read what's going on in this country, and you think one way, or you think another way. I don't want to get into the Trayvon Martin business, but you know, there are people who are on all sides of this issue. And the more you read and the more you study about this, the more you change. So I think that everybody wants to know how Milan Jakovic is going to change in the books. And I think that's the secret to making people care about him and want to know more about him.
All right, my friend. I appreciate your time. I know you're in the middle of a book.
Well, before I go, Dan, I want to say something to your friends who are listening. Dan Kennedy gets a co-author credit on this book. He really deserves it. When we started out on this collaboration, if you will, and by the way, he didn't stand over my shoulder and tell me what to write at all, but he has supplied me with so much research on every part of this book, because it doesn't all take place, you know, at a racetrack. A lot of it is business, and Dan has given me such an incredible amount of stuff, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm the only guy who had anything to do with this book, because he was so influential with me, and I'm hoping, Dan, that we can do this again one of these days.
That would be great. And if not before, I'll see you at the signing on August 3rd.
August 3rd at the Hudson Library. We will be there. So thank you very much for inviting me, and nice talking to all you other folks, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Les.
Thank you, Les.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
Les. Bye-bye.
All right, so before we move on, to plug the book, if people haven't gone and gotten it yet, Amazon stands waiting, any other bookseller as well. It is Win, Place, or Die by Les Roberts with Dan Kennedy, and it is has all of his detective novels are set in beautiful Cleveland, Ohio. Les, by the way, had a previous career in Hollywood as a TV writer and producer, and chooses to live in Cleveland for reasons of his own, as do I, different reasons, of course. This book and all the other books are set here, and this one has a harness racing background, and I think you'll enjoy it. And I think I always encourage copywriters, marketers, entrepreneurs to read good fiction, particularly series fiction, because I think there is a lot to be learned from this ability to hold an audience from book to book to book to book to book. So, with us on the call now, kind of from our world, we have three people for whom I have three questions. But first, I'm going to let everybody do their own introductions. So, since we've already heard your voice several times, Lee, why don't you go first?
Okay. I'm Lee Miltier. I run the Peak Performers for GKIC. I also have Millionaire Smarts as a coaching add-on for other coaches. And one of my books is Success is an Inside Job, and you can find that at miltier.com.
Okay, terrific. And Donna?
Hi, Dan. I'm Donna Kretsch. Pardon the voice. I'm dealing with a little bit of a cold here. I've got a local business that is fitness and weight loss, where a typical gym does about $200,000 a year. We do about $1.5 million for the size of our gym. We have about 100 locations across the nation that license this particular business model from us, and I also teach folks when I speak and through books something I call success with substance, and that's using the same truths to succeed in business that help you succeed with home and family and vice versa. And the best way to find me is DonnaKretsch.com, K-R-E-C-H.
And Mr. Nant.
Hey, everyone. Nick Nanton here, the CEO and Chief Storytelling Officer at the Celebrity Branding Agency. We've got a bunch of books out. You can check us out.
You can always tell, you know, a certain age. when they start giving themselves titles, like I saw somebody interviewed last night on TV whose job is chief concept officer. You know, when they start giving them titles like chief concept officer and chief storyteller, you know they're in the well under 40 and maybe under 30, you know, age bracket.
Oh, you're killing Donna and I now.
I mean,
this is Nick. He's entitled. He can do it.
Yeah.
All good.
Wisdom. Go ahead, guy.
No, and so you can check us out at celebritybrandingagency.com. That's it.
Aren't you going to plug the forthcoming book?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know when's the right time. So, yeah, we have a book called Story Selling that you, of course, wrote the foreword for. I'm really excited about it. The reviews thus far from everyone who's read it from the marketing world as well as beyond are equally as excited about it. So I think it's going to be a pretty big book, and it really breaks down everything from the psychology of how to tell your story, but most importantly, how to use it to sell. So that will be coming out, I believe, in September.
Good. Very good. All right. So the first thing I kind of like to go around the circle on with all three of you is what, and hopefully there is something that you know and that you, well, otherwise.
This is scary.
that you know do today that you weren't doing several years ago, either with regard to your own story, how you tell and use your story, or how you use others' stories in selling. Let's just reverse the order and let's start with Nick.
Okay, cool. So the thing that I really started with, and I'm going to keep this to like 3 minutes, but a lot of concepts
here.
You
don't have to.
Okay, cool. The thing that I try to tell people from the beginning is I work in the branding world, which there's lots of confusion about, and what I really like to try to break it down to is your brand is your story, and branding is just storytelling. So if you can remember that, then you won't get that confused. So what I have found through doing a bunch of research for the book, you know, and just in the work we've been doing with our clients over the last few years, we found that really the guy who gets paid the most is the guy with the best story. I had a guy in here on Monday for a consulting day, $10,000 consulting day, and he said, you know, I'm charging X for my product. This guy's charging two times more, and it came right out of his mouth, and I guess he's just telling a better story. And so that's what we've really found from storytelling. But the things that I find most interesting about storytelling is that, you know, your left brain is what processes all the hard data stuff, all the organizational and all the math, all that sort of stuff. And your right brain is the creative side of the brain. And when you talk to people, and if you asked an audience of 100 people which side of the brain do stories, you know, pertain to and which side of the brain lights up, you know, 99% of them are going to say the right side of the brain, the creative side. And what's so interesting about it is that's actually not the case. It's actually, it appeals to the side of your brain that actually makes sense of things, which is your left side of the brain. And so if you put it in like a modern day example of movies, let's say, you could either read a book on the history of Scotland or you could watch Mel Gibson kick everyone's butt in Braveheart. And so what would you rather do? And that's most likely watch the movie. So stories help your brain make sense of things that otherwise might be difficult. What also happens when your brain processes a story, your brain also releases a chemical called oxytocin. Oxytocin is like the love drug in your brain. There's all sorts of research going on with it now, but it's a thing that makes you feel warm and fuzzy. They think it gets released when you have an orgasm, and there's all sorts of research going on. But the bottom line is you release oxytocin when you hear a story because it kind of appeals to whatever that sense is in your brain. And then oxytocin has also been shown that chemical actually builds trust. So if you tell an effective story, you're going to be making sense of things for people and then building trust. And then just the last interesting thing to note about it, there's a thing called Dunbar's rule, where you can essentially only have about 150 relationships at any one time in your life. So, you know, that's been proven through Dunbar's research, as well as the U.S. military did a big study, and they figured out that, like, in a company or platoon, I'm not that very good at military language, you know, whatever it is, about the most people you can have effectively is about 150. So what's really cool about it is the more you watch someone on TV, the more someone shows up in your mailbox, like, if you watch Oprah every day, Oprah takes up one of those 150 spots. So your brain can't discern. I would imagine your brain can discern between number one and your top 10 friends and family. But once it gets over like 120 or whatever it might be, you're going to go lower. You know, your brain's going to be able to decipher less and less. So if you consistently tell your story through multiple media types, show up in people's mailboxes, inboxes, everything else, you become one of those 150 relationships, and now you've cracked the code to becoming a friend in the business. And who do people call when they have a problem? They don't get quotes from multiple people. They call their friend in the business. And the fact of the matter is, if you effectively told your story, you told them your story of your downfalls, your successes, your struggles, your triumphs, and you now have a shared experience with the audience. It's like if we all went and read this book collectively and we had a book club and talked about it, even though we didn't experience the things in the book, we feel like we experienced it together because we had a shared experience. And the fact of the matter is that the secret of this whole deal is, if you become one of people's top 150 relationships, one of their top relationships, whether they know you or not, again, just by showing up, you have shared experience with them, they're going to feel like they are partially responsible for your success, and there's, like, mentally, it's impossible for them to try to go to a competitor. So that's some stuff we've been researching recently.
So I just want to go back here. So if people go to Amazon and get Win, Place, or Die and sit down and read Win, Place, or Die, they're going to have an orgasm.
Yes.
I knew you were going to say that.
There we go.
I knew that was coming up.
That's never going to sell the book, right?
That's like the best book pitch I've heard in a while.
You're welcome.
Very good, Nick. Very good.
All right, Donna?
Well, I'll tell you. That was outstanding, Nick.
Yes.
I really appreciate knowing that information. It's great for concept, and it goes right into strategy. And my response to the question, Dan, is a bit more tactical, because it's very much what we do in our business and then have other businesses learn how to do it from us. We've always done testimonials. And when I say always, I'm going to say from the moment that I got a glimpse of you at a success event, I realized that, you know, I want to tell somebody's story. I want to tell a before and after. I think every single business on the planet needs to be doing this. I don't care what they sell. And so we've always done the testimonial. But today, we do them far better than we ever used to do them. I would just kind of have the person tell their story. And if we were making a television ad, we kind of got whatever they said. If they happen to write out a testimonial sheet, because we use those also, I just kind of got whatever they wrote out. Well, today, I do it very interview style. If I'm interviewing them for a television commercial, I literally stand beside the camera and I ask them specific questions about key triggers that I know the prospect is going to be interested in. And I ask them in such a way that it will cause them to tell me their story. I also then took it to another level and said, okay, I want to get an interview show. So now I have those customers on that interview show with me, and I prep them ahead of time so that I can, you know, cause them to feel comfort and feel secure, that they don't have to learn anything. I'm certainly not going to put words in their mouth. I just want their words. But I ask them the questions that I know are going to get them to tell me the story that I want my prospect to hear. In my case, for like the local business, it's things like, what medications did you used to take you no longer take? And they'll list the story of being on the medication and what it feels like not to be on the medication. What foods have surprised you that you're getting to eat, your favorite foods that you didn't know you'd even get to eat? And they'll list things like chocolate cake, pizza, and they'll give a story of having the pizza with their grandchildren. And it literally just draws that prospect in, maybe the person who couldn't ever lose before or who didn't know they'd be able to have these experiences. But then, even maybe the more powerful thing than that I have done with story is I use this testimonial everywhere. I repurpose it everywhere. I use the audio. I use the video. I get it transcribed. I use the print. I use a tiny little piece of the print up on a billboard. I use bits and pieces of the print in social media. I mean, I use it. When the prospect comes in my door, we're really good. We use scripts for everything, and we're really good at finding out how they heard about us. Now, I know a lot of ad people will tell you you can't discover that. But I'll tell you, if you have the right script and you drill down, you can get pretty darn close. So we ask a person not just how did you hear about us, oh, I saw the ad on television, but, well, what about that ad made you come in today or made you call? And they'll tell us, well, who was featured on that and why did you respond to them? So we start asking the prospect about the story that they heard. Well, here's the kicker. They then meet that person, because I will many times over and over again feature the people in the testimonials that are working in our facility. So now that prospect comes in, they actually meet the person that they related to, and I keep that story going. That person that they meet, my team member, welcomes them to the family before they ever buy, because there's such a connection that that team member welcomes them in. Now, should they not enroll, which rarely happens, our closing rate is like 85-90%, but if they don't enroll, that person, again, comes over at the end of the presentation and reiterates that connection again. So we're using story from the very, very beginning, and I'm pulling out as much emotional trigger as I can possibly pull out of that customer to turn and relate to that prospect. I think we need to remember that when we tell a prospect something, and it's lovely, but somewhere in the back of their mind, they know good and well that we're marketing to them. When another person says it, it's beyond truth. It's beyond credible. It's beyond real. And they feel like they've found a friend, and they buy because they heard the friend's story.
Well, you know, since you mentioned TV, I can tell you this from a lot of infomercial work, and it's a mistake with testimonials that you see made, actually two mistakes. One, you enunciated immediately, which is sort of the take whatever you get approach, and people just pile up testimonials, but there's no strategy to connecting them to prospects' fears, concerns, desires, objections, or to specific prospects, which is the second mistake. I can tell you that people can, as you said, if they are questioned properly, they can enunciate why they bought, what pushed them over the edge, what they remember, what is stuck in their mind that led to the sale, and it is almost always a story. And more importantly, it is almost always a story in which they found something, or a person about whom they found something to personally identify with. And so you see in print, the most common mistake is a testimonial that is JA, initials only, or is just a person's name, or just a person's name and where they're from. Not the fact that they're a fireman,
right,
or that they're a school teacher and grandmother with 16 grandkids or whatever. And so the smart thing to do when you use other people's stories is to be sure that you pull out of them and then provide as many different ways as possible that somebody might, you know, identify with them. And
well,
the other thing... The other thing for people to keep in mind about this is that people hear the thing and relate to the thing that is meaningful to them, even though 50 other people hearing, seeing, or reading the same thing might not notice that tiny little reference. I mean, I, for the 9 years that I was on the success events, and probably maybe a dozen years total of doing the main magnetic marketing speech, every time I had 75 minutes or more and I didn't have to cut, there was a tiny little reference in it to having stuttered as a child. and a tiny little reference in it to having been bankrupt. And there were always people gathered around afterwards waiting to ask me about one of those two things, to tell me their stuttering story about their child who stutters, or to tell me their bankruptcy story. And in 75 minutes, each one of those items probably consumed 3 seconds. But the person who identifies with that hears it. And when you build a story, you kind of want to use every part of the pig, because you're knocking down people, this one with item A, this one with item B, this one with item C, this one with item D.
I think what happens is people don't know, business folks really don't know how to ask the questions, and they don't know they don't know. So what we encourage people to do is get, like you're suggesting, get as vast a variety of people as you can, the men, the women, the younger, the older, the Caucasian, the African-American, the Hispanic, I mean, just and little and big, and just get as vast a variety as possible. And we literally will go through and ask every possible question. We won't use them all, but we'll get every possible question asked so that we can pull the information out. And what I have discovered, and even with the people that I work with, they just don't know how to ask the question. You just said it perfectly. You can get the information out of anybody. They won't stand there and just say it on their own. They don't know what to say. They feel a little uncomfortable sometimes, or they feel they're bragging, or they'll tell you what happens a lot is they'll tell you what they think you want them to tell you. And if you just ask the right questions, everything changes. I think much like being involved in your world, Dan, you probably inspired Nick to do story selling. And what you inspired me to do is to begin teaching people even more. We've always done it in our own company, but teaching people outside of our own company how to ask the right questions. Because I'll tell you what, that's the reason we have such a high closing rate. When you use testimonials correctly from start to finish, you don't have to do a lot of selling yourself because it's already done.
All right. Lee.
Well, Don and Nick have covered, you know, so many great things. I do want to say that your book, Dan, your autobiography, probably helped me more than anything else other than, you know, knowing you about telling stories on stage. I think the question was, what did you used to do that you're now doing? As a human potential speaker, I used to go teach a lot of information, but I didn't used to share a lot of stuff about myself. And I started realizing that, you know, information really doesn't move people at all, but enthusiasm or energy moves people, and the stories. And just recently, I emceed something here in my hometown in Virginia Beach, and this lady came up to me, and she talked about the speech I gave 20 years ago, and she remembered the story that I told, and that's all she remembered. And it's so amazing to me that 20 years ago, she could almost tell the story. She said that story had such impact to her, and she identified with it. And so now what I truly realized is that whole bonding experience. And so, you know, when you were just talking about when you stuttered as a child, you know, I grew up on a farm. I always mention that. I always mention how close I am to animals. There are certain things that I know are going to bond with people that make you memorable. And I've also realized that when you're with people, if you can make them laugh, you know, Nick gave great information about, you know, people bonding with you and chemicals and things. But I also think those endorphins, when you tell a story and make someone laugh, they really do bond with you. They feel close with you. They feel like they almost know you. So, again, the big change for me really has been, Dan, when you wrote your autobiography and, you know, really shared, I remember I'd known you for many, many years, and when I read that, there were so many occasions I was dumbfounded at your story. And it's memorable, and it makes people feel very close to you that you disclose, and I know you use that word a lot. So when you're telling a story and you're disclosing intimate things, again, it makes people bond. So that's what I think about storytelling.
Well, you said an important thing, and Les said it about his character as well. People really prefer being in relationships with people they feel they know. And so it doesn't really matter whether it's a business relationship, as Nick said, trust relationship, whether it's a personal relationship, whether it's a relationship with a fictional character that you're going to spend 3 days in a book two or three times a year, depending on how prolific the author is. It's a TV personality. And some are really good at having people think they know them and they don't know them at all. Carson
right.
was famous for that. Actually, an extremely private person, and yet the American public believed that they knew him like they knew their next-door neighbor. And so I've always found the disclosure beneficial. Very early, I wasted some time and energy, you know, trying to sort of model somebody else. And actually, even given the less than perfect personality I've got, the more I used it, the more money I made, and the more disclosure, the more money I made. And so I think to whatever extent somebody is willing to do that,
and it's hard.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, it's, well, I don't know that it's hard.
Well, sometimes it's hard.
Different than the way most people are conditioned to approach the world.
Well, you know, you and I talk all the time about shtick.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to go and shtick on stage. In fact, I'm buying stuff for my new house, and the other day I went to the salesman, and he's totally in shtick, and I'm like, just stop the shtick and, you know, get to the point. But, you know, we can do shtick very easily, but when it comes to disclosing things, like in my life when I started disclosing, you know, that my husband got killed, or, you know, intimate things about myself, the way people bonded to me was in a way that I was, one, first, surprised, and secondly, shocked at how much more sales I made by telling them all of my, you know, the difficulties I'd gone through in life. Because I think that when they see you on stage and, you know, you have your beautiful suit on and you're all coiffed and beautiful, that they actually think you have no problems or you've never had anything bad happen to you. And, of course, we know that's not true. So I found it really hard to tell people those kind of things because I'm a little bit of a control freak, as you well know, and so sharing something really intimate, you know, about your life where you're kind of laying yourself open to people was hard for me. But once I was able to go through that barrier and then disclose things, my connection to people became much stronger. My sales definitely increased. My speaking engagements increased. My book sales increased. So, I mean, I know for a fact how powerful, you know, when people can relate to you and think that you, you know, you weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth and you had to work really hard. In fact, a lady said to me just 2 weeks ago, she said, you've gone through so many trials and tribulations in your life. She said, whenever I get in a really bad time and I think about quitting, she said, I actually think about you. So we do make a great impact on people. And oftentimes we're telling stories we don't even think will make an impact, but they do.
Well, Don and I have had this conversation a number of times on Titanium. You and I have had, too. What I tell people about their adversities is you paid a significant price for these things.
Yes, you do.
So, a big price. So, I mean, you know, not using them is like, you know, having four Jaguars sitting out in the garage and not driving them. I mean, you bought them. You paid for them. You certainly earned the right to use them. And it is part of what people want to know about somebody. That makes them feel they're getting authentic truth, and they like to be around somebody who has who has triumphed.
Yes.
Whether it's triumph over adversity or triumph over evil or triumph over self-doubt and anxiety and emotional issues, they like to be around somebody who has triumphed.
Because in some way it gives them hope that they can do that.
Well, that's right. Yeah. So I'll go in the reverse direction now. So Lee will just stay with you. So you sort of already got there, but with regard to the way you present yourself to the public, the Lee Miltier character. And her personal story. What do you think is maybe one or two of the most significant things about that that works for you? And has any of it surprised you?
The things that work for me the most is really sharing with people that, you know, I grew up super poor. My joke on stage is, you know, my parents, as long as I had, you know, food in my belly and a roof on my head, I was pretty much good to go. I mean, I grew up in a really bad childhood and yet didn't give up, didn't fall down, expect somebody else to take care of me. And you've known me many, many years, know that I have gone through and dealt with many things that would stop what I would call an average human being and then just kept going. That tenacity, that persistence, that absolutely kick-ass, I'm going to do it attitude seems to excite people and make it actually motivates people that they can do those things. And so I'm often surprised at when I share my life, at how many people share their life with me, because you get off stage, usually there are questions. You're not often expecting people to tell you their stories. I think, you know, as far as the Lee Miltier character, there is, when you get on stage, there is this other part of you that takes over there. There is the I can handle anything kind of person. And I am pretty proud of the fact, Dan, that most people do say I am pretty much the same person on stage as off stage. So, you know, I stay in character because the character really is me. I enjoy sharing information with people that empowers them and gives them the tools and strategies and information that they need to create for their own life. And so I think having come from such humble roots, that inspires them. In fact, you and I briefly talked about this recently, the Donald Trump roast. And, you know, one of the things that was said at the Donald Trump roast was they joked about how his father had done so much for him. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's a real distinction that I make to the world is, you know, there are people in life who are born who have so much help, and of course they should get ahead. Absolutely they should get ahead. I mean, my God, if somebody's going to, you know, give you the best schools and the best everything and give you money and, you know, set you up in business, you damn well better be doing well. But when you come from a place that you have absolutely nothing and you are scratching it out and you know, positioning yourself and willing to do everything and anything to get ahead, it's a much better story.
All right, Donna, same question. What really works for you? What do you think resonates most in the way you present yourself to the public?
Well, I guess in answering that, Dan, I would make the point that I, a long time ago, got sick and tired of my story. And I stopped telling it. I just am who I am. I feel pretty humbled and almost surprised at the same time when people will thank me for being so vulnerable. Because I have to tell you, I just think to myself, this is who I am. This is my stuff goes on in my life and I tell people. And when I got tired of telling my story and I stopped, I realized somewhere in that time period that the who I am kind of got hidden. She kind of went away because I wasn't telling the story that so many people needed to hear. I was just so tired of telling it that I came to realize coming through that, that we get tired of our story a long, long time before anybody else is going to.
Yes, we do.
And what I came to realize is two big things that changed, you know, the way you say my presentation. One, I really, truly came to embrace that people need my story. They need it. It gives them hope, and that's what I'm here for, to give them hope and show them how to overcome obstacles and show them how to make the money they want to make and show them how to make their dreams come true. And I've done it. I'm living proof. The other thing it showed me is that my vulnerability, which is very much a part of my personality, is not a big deal to me, but it blesses other people so much. I'm just me. I'm just real. So I just talk about what I'm going through. And when I talk about people needing that story, I think I tell my story. We were talking about this in Titanium. Steve and I were talking about this. And because, you know, you said Donna's got her story so down. And I began to talk about it, and I got completely choked up. And I think you had even said she even, you know, gets choked up at the same places.
Well, I unkindly said that you could eye on cue, but and we joke about your, you know, I couldn't feed my baby story. I keep telling her that her daughter now should get a royalty every time she tells the story, like a, you know, like a music drop. You know, Paul Anka gets money every time somebody plays Happy Birthday.
Oh God, what a good gig!
So you know, this kid by now ought to, you know, be set for life on the drop fee for the story. But it is an exceptional story, exceptionally well told. Your point is a very good one. We will often get weary of it or disinterested in it, and sort of want to move on to other things when it is what brought us to the dance and it is due to the person encountering it for the first time. And it is, in fact, what they need to hear for their own benefit as well as for our benefit, to know us and trust us and feel good about being in a client or customer or patient, you know, relationship with us.
Well, I think that what I was going with that is that when Steve and I were talking and he said, man, you make me get choked up every time you get choked up. And I said, you know, I got to tell you, it's just gratitude. I'm just blown away that this is my life. When you do, in fact, have a real true story where you were pushing a child in a stroller, you didn't know how you were going to be able to feed. And, you know, not only was I pushing her in that stroller, not only did I not know how I was going to feed her, but I'm bawling in the memory. I'm crying. Well, you got a powerful emotion, and when that's so real, and then, as you know, Dan, she works with me today, so when it's so real that I'm looking at me and I'm looking at her, I just get overwhelmed with gratitude. So not only do I want to give hope, but kind of send that message that, listen, there are a lot of other people who are in a lot worse place than you. You can look up and you can be okay. There are a lot of other people, even you, who were in a worse place than you are now. I mean, when I tell about getting thrown up against bedroom walls, it's gratitude because I'm married to the man of my dreams. When I tell about John having cancer four times, two with a 0% cure rate, it's gratitude because I've been through it, he's come through it, we're still here. Like you talk about bankruptcy, I mean, it's just, it's not only you can beat this and there's hope, but it's kind of bringing people around to the real life, being grateful for where you're at. Now, I was able to get past, you know, I mean, I got to tell you, I'd love to say that I finally embraced that my story gives people hope, and that made me start being excited about telling my story again. There was something else, and then that was that I made it very specific to who I am, because that was a history story. So I brought it forward and made it very specific to who I am. See, the work ethic and the faith that kept me pushing that stroller and getting up every day and moving forward, Well, those also are the very traits that gave me multiple businesses that have given me million-dollar success. They're the same traits. So now I talk about, when I finish my story, I talk about success with substance. It's, you know, we need the tools and the skills required to have success in business, but we also need the tools and skills needed to give us the time for the stuff in life that matters. And they're the same tools and skills. I mean, I take the story, the history story, I tie it to the success with substance idea, which is my philosophy on life, and then I really tie all of that to whoever I'm talking to. I mean, I took John, my husband, several years ago as a surprise for his birthday. He'd always talked about driving on the Autobahn. He wanted to drive on the Autobahn because there's no speed limit. So several years ago, that's what I got him for his birthday. I surprised him with a Mercedes on the Autobahn. And when I talk to a group of women in business, I talk about how we went to Neuschwanstein, after I tell the whole story about the Audubon, we went to Neuschwanstein, which was the model for the Cinderella Castle in Disney World, and I talk about my life, kind of a Cinderella life. Well, when I'm talking to a group of auto repair guys, I take the same story about the Audubon. I don't so much talk about Neuschwanstein as I talk about how we were going full out, no speed limit, down that road, and I looked at my husband and said, this is a dream come true for you. Isn't this amazing? And he said, yeah, but it was amazing when I was 16 when I got the beater car, too. Like, it's just...
See, what would have worked is a great story to insurance agents about how much insurance you bought on. until you ruined it by being in the car.
That's good.
Nick, same question.
He's probably forgot what the question is by now.
I got it. I'm good. So, I mean, mine is fairly simple, but using as much visual storytelling as you can, and I do mean that literally. I mean it two ways. Literally, I mean, we saw a huge shift in our clients, in their clients' perception of them when we started literally telling their stories through video and documentaries, through films, all that sort of thing. But it also can be used. I mean, you're a great example of that, Dan. I mean, you use visual storytelling and writing all the time. And so the more you can get someone to visualize it, the better. And it, there is something to be said for getting them to visualize it as a part of the story, so doing it in writing. But I've found a great amount of success when I don't leave it to their imagination. I show them exactly what I want them to see. And in fact, I can make them cry on cue when I can do that. I mean, one of the things that's so cool about moving pictures and music, which is films, is that it's like the most manipulative form of media in the world. I mean, you could walk into a movie or watch a TV show and you can meet a character within 5 minutes. I mean, the short documentary won Emmy for, you know, it's 7 minutes long, and I have people crying within 4 minutes, and they never heard of this person, seen this person before. So it's a really manipulative form of media to use video and storytelling together. You can use it for good, you can use it for evil. I choose to use it for good, of course. But I just found the more visual you can become with the storytelling, the more effective it is.
You know, we showed it at the last Titanium meeting. It's a very old, Nick, you probably haven't seen it. You would probably find it interesting. There's a film called Another Man's Family. And for decades, it was used by pretty much everybody who sold fire alarms in the home. And so, spoiler alert, we in the industry, everybody calls this the crying dog film. Because the film is, and I don't know, it's probably... Donna, did you stay and watch it?
Listen, I knew what was coming. I was messed up before it ever even happened.
I'm trying to decide. I think it's about 20 minutes long. And it's this 1950s, which is when it was produced, although people used it all the way through the 80s. This happy sort of lassie sitcom family and the father going off to work and the kids are going out to play and the dog is ever present in this story, as is the little girl's doll that she is dragging with her everywhere. But you don't realize you're being set up. And so the story goes through their typical day and everybody reconvening for dinner and happy evening, and so forth. And, of course, an overloaded outlet after everybody has gone to bed sets the house on fire, because we are selling fire alarms after all. And the house burns down, and everybody dies, and it's horrible. And the punchline of the film, the end of the film, is you're out there with the fire inspectors walking around through the rubble and the ashes, and they're talking about essentially how if these people had only had a decent alarm system, they might have got out alive. And at the very end, now you see the dog made it, and the dog is kind of roaming around in the rubble. And the very end of the film is the dog finding the little girl's doll. Curling up on the ground with the doll, and the close-up of mournful face of the dog, the camera zooms way in on the dog, and a tear comes out of the corner of the dog's eye and trickles down the side of the dog's face. And if you can watch it and not tear up...
Impossible. It is.
It's almost impossible. I've probably seen the thing, I don't know, 200 times, and it still gets me, and I know it's going to get me. And to Nick's point, you can't really do that by telling the story. There is no other medium that would deliver that with the same impact as that visual. And it sold a whole lot of fire alarms without really ever dealing with product features and benefits and statistics and any of that, because it is so powerful. And it really gets to the point of not only story important, but all the different ways we can present the story and all the different ways that we can tell our story is important. With a little bit of eye on the clock, and I'm going to start with you and go backwards. You started to mention it, so you'll probably resume with it. I give you a chance for a client case history, a coaching member case history, somebody in a business, and it'd be really cool if they were in like an ordinary business, not our business, but they don't have to be, but somebody who you know, you've had some real impact with getting them to use their story effectively and any strategies that they have used.
Sure. So, I mean, one of the ones that comes to mind is Tracy Myers, great guy, car dealer, right? And so, I mean, I love this example because if it will work for a used car dealer, who will it not work for? And so basically, we made a documentary on this used car dealer in North Carolina. Again, he's a great guy, great business. He's one of the top used car dealers in the country. But we made a 30-minute show on him, and we aired it on TV several times. And we actually went into the community, and he did this. He went to the four major network affiliates and said, hey, an Emmy Award-winning director just came in town and did a documentary on me and my business and why it's so different, and I want to run it on TV, but I'm only going to let one of you have it first. So they kind of clawed to get it. He ran it on a Sunday, I believe. I think it was an NBC affiliate, and he actually was the highest watched show during that time segment on any of the channels in town. And interestingly, it's probably because they'd seen enough commercials about him and stuff. I mean, if I flipped through the channels and I saw a documentary about a local lawyer that I'd seen on TV or a well-produced documentary on someone locally, I'm probably definitely going to watch at least part of it once. Well, every time he runs it, he gets so from the traffic, they actually invited him to be the opener for the Super Bowl in that region. So, I mean, not the actual game, but the Super Bowl, you know, starts at like 1 o'clock, coverage starts or whatever. And so he was on just before that and got a bunch out of that too. But every time he runs it, he gets calls from people in the community just thanking him for telling his story. And so we shifted the view of a community from a guy who does crazy car commercials, which he does, to completely to a family man, a guy who's just out working for an honest living and would love to help you find a new car. We also got nominated for an Emmy for it, and we lost to a documentary about a guy who'd been in jail wrongfully for 20 years. So I'm not shocked that the used car dealer didn't beat out the guy who'd been in jail wrongfully for 20 years. But the other thing that happened is we won some awards for it. So we got the Emmy nomination. We won some Telly Awards for it. We obviously made a movie poster. We aired it on my series on biography profiles of success. And when we air that, we give our clients an award called the Golden Reel. It's this huge old-fashioned film reel that's like gold-plated, and then it's got all, you know, it's in a huge shadow box, 24 by 36 inch movie poster size. He has a movie poster hanging in his office. He's got the awards. When you walk into this guy's office, and any of my clients who've done this sort of stuff with me, the story is being told for them. They don't have to do anything. People just look at the walls and the accolades with the photo, the artwork being what it needs to be, the photos being what they need to be, and you're no longer walking into the office of a used car dealer. I just did three of these on tax lawyers. I've done them on financial advisors. You're no longer walking into the office of another financial advisor or another car dealer. It's the equivalent, actually, Dan, of walking into like Rocky Blyer's office as a financial advisor. You're not walking into the office of a financial advisor. You're walking to the office of a hero, a guy you've always wanted to meet, a Hollywood star that happens to be willing to manage your money if you beg well enough. And this is what's happening to a used car dealer in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, based on using his story and telling it effectively.
Very cool. All right, and now I've lost the order. Is it Donna?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
I think so. Well, I'm just going to piggyback what Nick is saying, because what I – and I'll use Jill as an example, and then I'll use Marsha. Jill is – she has a dance studio, okay? I don't know really anything about this dance studio business, but I've been working with her for a long time, and she's had – multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars increase in her business, and one of the key reasons she tells me that she's seen this increase is because she never told her story. Now, in her advertising, when someone comes in to check on the dance lessons and they get the free dance lessons, she tells them why she is a dance studio owner, and she goes back to losing her mom. And she goes back to when she was a little girl, and she talks about the confidence that dance gives and what it did, how it brought her from where she was to where she is today. And now they are buying the person. So, you know, these moms are bringing their kids in, and they're not only are they not thinking about going anywhere else, but they're paying her more money than they would pay elsewhere. Now, the bigger use of, I shouldn't say bigger, but a far different use of story that we're seeing with huge success with our licensees and our clients is that we sit down with the prospect and we tell the prospect's future story to them. We look at what they want to accomplish. And I guess if we talk NLP, which is not where we got the idea, came up with it years ago and called it a walk with me, but it's paralleled now to a visualization technique that might be taught by somebody who practices NLP. In the presentation itself, it's a story about the prospect, and we find out how they want to feel. And during the front part of our questionnaire, which we're happy to share with anybody, we find out specifically how they want to feel, and then we ask them for story components based on how they want to feel. So we ask them questions. We need to find out, you know, where they want to be when they're feeling this way. We need to find out what they're going to be wearing. We find out who they might be with, what person will they be with. And then we always have to have some sort of reflective surface where they can see themselves in the story. And once we've gotten these four components, we now ask them literally, I'd like you to take a walk with me. And we tell them their story, the story of where they're going to be, how they're going to feel when they get to their goal. And after, you know, we take them there in the story and we ask them, how do you feel? And they give us all these fantastic descriptions. I feel on top of the world. I feel like $1 million. I feel like my dreams have come true. I mean, they get us all choked up by their answers. We give them a few seconds of soaking time, and then we drop our voice. And then we say, how do you feel right now? And we bring them back to now. And, I mean, we get everything from tears to laughter. I'm never going to feel this way again. I'm going to feel like that. To excitement, to fear. I can't die like my parents have. I mean, it's the story is such a powerful thing that you really can't put words to it. But I think what the point I want to make with this question is, it isn't just our story, and that's huge, but it's also someone else's story, especially in marketing and sales. Putting someone else into their own story and letting them feel like what it feels like to live the way they want to live, where they want to live, how they want to live, with whom they want to live with. And once you've built that up and you've created that emotion through that story, bringing them back to where they are now and allowing them and empowering them to make the decision based on their own words and their own feelings. And it's duplicable. We've taught it all over the country.
Terrific. Lee?
Donna is describing something that I teach peak performers, which I call scripting. And I have gotten so many phenomenal peak performer stories back from teaching them this. And it's everything Donna just talked about, but we do it in writing. So basically what I get them to do is go a certain period into the future and write their story as if it's already happened. And they're to write how they feel, what it looks like, what they're experiencing, and how it changes their life. And the marketer of the year this year, Jimmy Nicholson, I worked with him personally and helped him create his presentation to win that. And there was a couple things we did that were so successful. One is we scripted out him winning it. We also scripted out at the same time that he would lose 40 pounds. And he actually lost 66 pounds approximately, I think, before from the time we started the process of scripting to the time he got on stage. But I encouraged him to use his story when he was 15 years old on how he didn't even have a car and he was, you know, his first client, he had to get his mom to, you know, to drive him to make his first sales presentation to sell websites. And so when we did the kind of powwow after he won, you know, we both agreed that his story, I mean, his presentation for marketing was fantastic. Everything he had done, you know, to win was unbelievable. I mean, he really, really wanted to win. But the fact that he was so immersed in making his story come true was, you know, life-changing. And so I think I originally taught scripting to the Peak Group in March of this year, and then our last meeting was in Chicago in June, and that is the number one thing that we had covered in the last 2 years that they wanted to do more of and that they had had such success with. And there were several people who had lost weight with it. They had gotten more, they were making more money, but it's really about their own story and them being the hero in their own story. And I'm just going to share one more quick story, and that is I had a coaching client who wanted to be win this really big award here in the Hampton Roads area, and they literally had come in second place like 3 years in a row, and there's like 18 pages of application you have to fill out, and he'd filled out the application, and he was coaching with me, and we looked at it, and he said to me, he said, I damn well do not want to come in second again. What is it we could do? Or I could do that would make my application just pop that, you know, I want to win this, you know, I really want to win it. And so I suggested at the end there was a little thing where they could, you know, just say anything they wanted. So he and I actually scripted out his life story on how he had succeeded in life, even though, you know, he had had all these incredible obstacles and disappointments and failures, and how he had gone from failure to success. And it was because of the story that we put at the end of his application that actually won him the award.
All right. I want to give each of you pop out a website one more time, and then if any of you want to bail, you can. We're nearly done. And I have some announcements I have to make, and I may have time to take one or two questions, but I promise you guys if you wanted to get out a little early, you could. So, Lee, website?
Miltier.com, M-I-L-T-E-E-R.
Anna?
DonnaKretch.com, D-O-N-N-A-K-R-E-C-H.
And Nick?
CelebrityBrandingAgency.com.
All right. Shane, operator, if you're there, we're going to try and take maybe two or three quick questions. If you will tell people how to get in line, and then while they're doing that, I have to pay some bills, so I have a few commercials.
Yes, at the time and throughout the call, to enter the question queue, simply press the number 1 on your touchtone phone. Be aware that pressing number 1 more than once will remove you from the queue, so be sure to hit it just once, and we'll get to everyone in the order that they are received. So we'll get
okay, I have a few things to tell folks. One, hopefully you got the point that this is important regardless of the business you're in and in any and every business. But there is certainly no business that is more in tune with selling by story than the information marketing business. So a reminder for you, most of you on the call anyway, it's a reminder. For some of you, it might be new information, but we are about halfway through the Info Summit process for this year, getting folks registered for the annual Info Summit, the convention and conference and gathering of the information marketing industry, authors, speakers, coaches, consultants, publishers, and all of that combined into businesses. This is where everybody comes together to learn and grow and make contacts and network and find important vendors and so forth. If you are on this call as a GKIC Diamond member, you are fast approaching a deadline after which you will lose a registration discount of almost $2,000. Gold members, you are fast approaching a deadline after which you will lose a discount of almost $1,500. And all of the information is at dankennedy.com/info summit, or you can call 800-871-0147. It's going to be a fantastic event, and you ought not miss it. Les and I, for anybody who's within driving distance of beautiful downtown Hudson, Ohio, on Saturday, August 3rd, the Learned Owl Bookshop is sponsoring a signing and a reading and photos and all that good stuff at the Hudson, Ohio Public Library, easily accessible from Route 271, Route 77, or the Ohio Turnpike. And we would love to see you there from 3 to 4, and I'll be hanging around for about an hour afterwards, happy to talk about business stuff as well. And again, Win, Place, or Die, I think you'll find it a good read, an interesting introduction to very strong characters and very strong storytelling. And so that book, of course, you can find, you can get it if you come to the signing, if you're within driving distance. Learned Owl Bookshop will be present. You can, of course, go online to Amazon or BN.com, et cetera. And if you want to buy about 5,000 of them for Christmas gifts, get to my office directly, and we'll do something special. With that, let's try and fit in, if we have anybody, Shane, let's try and fit in a couple folks who want to talk about anything related to story.
Totally. First up, we have Susan in Pennsylvania. Go ahead.
My question is both to Lee and to Dan, because when she talked about the scripting, and I know Dan has taught the theater in the mind and that sort of work, how frequently do you read it, review it, do the theater in your mind, and is it possible to make that so big from where you're currently at that your brain kind of goes, that can't happen?
So I'm still here, Dan.
Good. Well, you've got
it. Okay. Well, when you're scripting, I think the last thing that you just said, if you're writing something that is totally not congruent, for instance, I'm 5'6", if I start writing I'm 5'9", you know, my subconscious is not going to believe that. I mean, I'll only be 5'9" with high heels. So you've really got to write things that are actually obtainable and that you will actually work towards doing, that you're just not expecting you know, magical thinking kind of thing. As far as how often do you do the scripting, I basically have been sharing with my peak group that, you know, as Dan talks about, the subconscious loves consistency. And so I urge them to find a time every day that they could do it consistently, because then the mind starts to really, I don't know, it just adapts very well to that. And so personally, I do my scripting every single morning. And so I'm writing, and I start the scripting off with, "And so it was." And then I, you know, I talk about myself, and I actually talk about myself in a third person. And I usually put anywhere from 6 months, 9 months, a year in advance. For example, I'm building a new home. So I've been scripting about the new home now for several years, and we actually just got started. And what the scripting does for you is it keeps expanding your references in your brain of what is possible. So, did you have other questions about that?
No, that's really helpful. But as far as if you can go too large in what you want to create, is that also a detriment, or is it just that you have to just keep that repetition up?
Well, you know, one of the things that I have found with, you know, I teach a lot of productivity information. If someone is trying to do a project and they're worried about the 10th step down the road, they're going to get a little freaked out. I always like, what is the next natural step? So when you're doing your scripting, if you're talking about 10 years from now, that's way too far out. I wouldn't probably do anything more than a year. And I also, again, it's got to be congruent with what is possible and what you're willing to work for.
You know, that's the key thing. What makes it fantasy is Charlie sitting under a tree visualizing himself as Warren Buffett.
Right.
But being entirely unwilling to study investing, to seek out coaches and mentors in investing, to spend money learning how to invest, to scale back his lifestyle by half so that he has money to begin investing right now. All he's going to do is sit under the tree once a day for an hour and visualize himself as Warren Buffett. He will get nowhere. It isn't the size of the chasm between where you are now and where you wish to be that is the problem. And someone can be self-defeating with a very small chasm. If they have a five-year-old automobile and they sit in it every day for an hour and think about having a new automobile, but they are not willing to put together a strategic plan and work in order to get the new automobile, they will get the same result as the guy who's visualizing himself as Warren Buffett. Nothing. So it's not the size of the chasm. It's the practical and pragmatic willingness to build the bridge. And so the subconscious mind on one level can't tell fact from fiction, but it can tell seriousness from fantasy.
Yeah.
And it does not respond well to the latter. Let's fit another one in. Shane?
Thanks.
Sure thing. It comes from Frank in California. Go ahead.
Hey, Dan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, sir.
I've been a subscriber, member, since 1983. And Lee, I'm also a big fan of yours.
Well, thank you.
My question's a compound question. I discovered Dan Kennedy and J.A. Bram around 1983. I was a young man at the time, super ambitious, intelligent, etc. In 1985, I won't go into the details, they're too long and too many, but I was unfortunately severely injured in a very serious accident, and it has taken me literally 23 years to discover, find out, about a clinic, a specific program to get me to be physically where I am now. I'm still very limited physically in movement, but during the 23 years, I've done nothing but read, study, et cetera, the opposite of what, quote unquote, most people do. And I guess, and no, I guess, my question now is, my finances, my social contacts are very limited now because of the last 23 years of not being able to produce. But like I said, I did study. I've got my field. I've got info products already made. What do you do when you're 61? You've been hidden from society because of your injuries. Now, because of new medicine, a new medicine and a doctor you didn't know of, I'm able to do stuff. But yet I'm still recovering, and I've got some heavy stuff to tell people. I am doing it. I'm doing as much as I can. If it wasn't for Dan's books and newsletter, I wouldn't know what or where to do. But now I'm just, living with my brother and trying to pluck. I know what to do, it's the how, okay? And I don't mean from a marketing sense. I mean, it's just running up against these walls that were built up by not being able to be, you know, to be for 22 years.
I'm going to cut you because of
the clock. Go ahead, yeah.
But, so, I don't know if Donna stayed with us.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, okay. So, in different ways, every one of us has arrived at a position like this. None of us by injury, but, and so, since you stayed, I'm going to let you play Fixum in the next 2 minutes.
You got a story to tell. You already know that. What you've got to do, it doesn't matter the social context. Start right where you are. Avail yourself of the internet, at least social media, because you can do that for free, and start telling this story. Get out there and start telling people they can overcome. They're going to be connected to you. You're going to give them hope, and you're going to just use that story to tie into the info products. It really doesn't even matter what they are, although they're probably about overcoming.
Yeah.
And every civic, every social, every community organization in your community, Frank, wants speakers, and they'll do it for free. They'll ask you to do it for free, but they'll let you sell.
You mean like Elks Clubs, American Legion?
All of them.
You start where you are. She's got it exactly right. You hook the story to something that you can monetize, and you begin to do something at a practical level every day. And with that, I'm going to cut you, and we're going to squeeze one more.
Thank you.
Jane, right. I can take one more.
Excellent. Comes from Steve in Florida. Go ahead.
Hey, Dan, Lee, and Donna, Steve Clark. Nick, you're still there, too.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys. Statement and then a question. I'm naturally open, pretty much an open book, and this storytelling and sharing my foibles comes fairly easily to me. It always has. Question I have is, when do you hold back for concern that in telling your story that you might lose your guru status with your audience?
Tell the end of it. I mean, I can answer that quickly. I tell the end of it. Tell the bad stuff and tell the good stuff. Tell
I said that again. You broke up, Donna.
Tell the lows and tell the highs. Tell the where you messed up, but then tell how you fixed it. Tell how you overcame it, or that you're still overcoming it. You still have the guru status, but you have the guru status who's real. But you still, you're who you are, Steve, and you're going to keep pressing through and keep going. That's who you are. And that's what gives you the guru status. I think that you tell the bad stuff, but you remember to tell the good stuff. I didn't do that for a long time, and I lost a little guru status, but I just left out the end of the story. That's all. When you include the end of the story, you're fine.
And then,
anybody else want in?
No, I absolutely agree with Donna. I have done that, and in fact, Dan called me on it once. I told a story, you know, about something, and I didn't get the audience response I was looking for, and he said, well, one, you didn't go further back for them to understand, and you didn't tell the end how you overcame it. So I think that really is the answer, Steve.
Okay, yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I was thinking more along the lines of what do you reveal and what don't you reveal, the, you know, the kind of the criteria there, but that's a discussion maybe another time.
Well, I can tell you the audience likes it when you tell them you messed up and how you messed up.
Yep.
They like that.
Yep. And I got to tell you, Steve, I wouldn't leave anything out. I mean, it's got to be done in the proper order, like Dan and Lee are talking about. It's got to be done with the right timing, but I wouldn't leave stuff out. They want to know your junk because they have junk.
Okay. So then,
all right, my
friend,
The clock has bit us.
Thank you.
Thank you all, Lee, Donna, Nick. Thanks very much. And thanks for everybody who was on the call. And by all means, buy the book. We got horses to feed and oats to buy and all of that. So thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye,
thanks,
y'all.
Guys. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.